It's taken Hope Jaron years to see the plants of the world as the complex living things that they are. Now she's hoping her book helps the rest of the world see them that way. In her new memoir, Lab Girl, Jaron tells the story of her lifelong fascination with science and plants and what it's like working as a woman in science. Veronica Rickard talked to her yesterday in our studios.
Hope, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much.
Well, you write about your lab in a way that I've never heard anybody write about a lab before, a way I haven't even really considered what a lab could be other than a place where science is done. In your own words, what is a lab to you?
Well, it's home. You know, I mean, I have a place where I sleep, but I have this place where I work and dream and play with my best friend and make stuff and figure stuff out and break stuff and fix it and mess up and come through. You know, the big, big moments of my life professionally and a lot of the personal ones all took place in a lab. The lab has moved around to different locations, but a lot of the stuff in it is the original stuff that I've always had. And a lot of labs, you know, they're the same at heart. They've got the same, you know, collection of beakers, you know, sort of like your kitchen. Every kitchen has measuring cups and things like that. There's a collection of stuff that was always there. And, of course, those things remind me of my father's lab. And it's this place that's always been in my life. And I can't imagine not having a lab to go to. I mean, I sit around, I talk about it. And I start looking at this studio and thinking, why am I here? You know, I have a lab somewhere I could be in. What is wrong with this day that I'm not in my favorite place? But I'm glad to be here talking to you.
And you said your father was a scientist and you hung out with him in the lab ever since you were small. Some of your earliest memories sounds like you remember playing beneath the bench in his lab. So you obviously connected with that. But when did you realize that this was a deeper connection that was also science, and this is what you wanted to do with the rest of your life?
Well, I never did realize it because, in fact, my earliest memories were in the lab. My father was a community college teacher. He taught at the same place for 42 years, and he taught all the sciences. He taught in rural Minnesota. It was the only higher education institution in the county, and he wasn't just a scientist. He was the scientist, you know, in the county, and he taught, you know, physics was his great love, and he taught earth science and chemistry in the engineering courses, and he had demonstrations and lab benches, and all the students had their stuff, and somebody in my family was always working, and so after dinner, he had papers to grade, and he had to set up for the next day, and me and my brothers went with him, and we learned how to fix the stuff and maintain it and pull it out and go through the next day's exercise, and my very earliest memories were doing that with him. He loved the place, and we loved being there, and he let us have full run of the place. And so I always thought, well, when I grow up, I'll have a lab and we'll do this and that. And I thought that's what just people did, you know?
They grew up and had labs.
And it wasn't until later that people asked me how I decided to become a scientist or how I would. And I never did decide it. I think I was the same scientist in a very important way then that I am now, which is why the book is called Lab Girl, because I was a girl in the lab. I was the lab girl. And, you know, that is what I still am at my core. That's what I still am.
And it ended up that your specialty, the thing that really held you spellbound, was plants. You study soil chemistry, biochemistry. You do work with isotopes, trying to figure out what the lives of plants were like way before we were around. What is it about plants in particular that you love?
It was sort of the hardest problem I could come up with. You know, it was sort of the biggest challenge I could set for myself. My dad loved rocks, and we would drive, you know, in the summer. You know, teachers have the summer quote unquote off, right? And in the summer we would drive, you know, hundreds of miles to see this rock that he'd read about, this outcrop or whatever. And so I always loved rocks. And I was studying rocks, and I was studying rocks that are made inside plants because they turn up as fossils. And just like, you know, you not exactly like, but your teeth are actually made out of rock. They're made out of mineral. So there's a lot of organisms that precipitate minerals as part of their biological functioning. And plants do that too. You know, a peach pit is an example of that. So for my dissertation, I was studying a mineral that's precipitated inside hackberry seeds, which is a little tree that's kind of ordinary, but it's everywhere. And I set up these experiments where I was watching these trees all summer and I was recording different attributes of them. And then at the end, the grand finale was I was going to collect these fruits and analyze the minerals inside. Well, we got to the end of the summer, and none of the trees, I had trees in South Dakota and Nebraska, and none of the trees bore fruit that year. And nobody could tell me why. And the local landowners said, yeah, this sometimes happens, but there wasn't anything obvious correlated with the weather or whatever it was. And it just became very, very clear to me during that time that these things weren't there in order to produce materials that I could use in my thesis. They were doing their own thing for their own reasons. And that was my first glimmer into the fact that understanding how these things are alive. I mean, I knew plants were alive in a way that rocks weren't, but the depth of how much they were alive and how inscrutable that would be and how figuring out even just a little corner of how they worked and what they were trying to do by being alive, I knew that was going to be one of the biggest challenge I could come up with and the great problem of my life, it turns out.
And you also, you give the reader a glimpse into what it's like to see the world, to see plants through your eyes and seeds. I'm now seeing in completely different ways, thanks to the way that you write about them.
And that was the only thing that helped, you know, is to think, you know, guess what? This tree wasn't, it wasn't having my summer. It wasn't like, okay, we're going to make the fruits and we're going to write a thesis and da, da, da. It was doing its own thing for its own reasons. And so only when I started to look at the world, like, what, why does it? What's it trying to do when it makes a seed? What's it trying to accomplish with this mineral? That's the only way I ever got closer to getting some insight in the problem. And so I began to think that way and think that way at every turn. And that was kind of my go-to. And there's things that I've learned from walking around the world that way. And I wanted to share it. And I did my best to put that in language that could be shared. And it's a great, great joy to see that people think that was something worth sharing.
We're talking with Hope Jaron right now. She is a biochemist, studies plants, as we're talking about. And her new book is called Lab Girl. It's a story of her life in science. And Hope, one thing you invite the reader to do early on is to look out the window. Look past all the human-made buildings that are out there and see all the green stuff, the trees, and to see things differently. I mean, when you see the world now, because you've said that you're only really, you know, some decades into your career starting to see plants really for what they are. How do you see them now when you look out and see a tree?
Well, the more you see them, the less you see yourself, I think. You know, we live, compared to our grandparents. One thing I do in the classroom is I say, how many people grew up on a farm? And then I say, raise your hand if your parents grew up on a farm. And then I say, raise your hand if your grandparents grew up on a farm. And then a generation back. And you start out with almost no hands up, and you end up with most of the hands in the classroom up. And this varies from room to room. But what we've done in these course of generations is we've really gotten away from the land. We've gotten away from the way we used to live, which was to really worry about how the world was greening up each year and noticing, you know, every leaf that grew because, you know, that was coming to somebody's supper table or to somebody's bank account. And now we live in very urban spaces. We live in social spaces where plants don't seem to matter. And yet, if you look around and see how much around you is made out of wood, or if you consider a lot of the medicines that we use, and of course all the food that we eat is based on plant productivity, you see that we are living with it. We've just removed it in our experience. And so I start out the book by saying, let's get back to that. And it's easy. Just notice it. Just notice it with me. And I've seen how that can enrich people's lives. You know, that's a lot of what I do in the classroom, is encourage students to say, well, actually, when you go outside, there's way more green stuff than there is animal stuff or even built stuff. You know, if you just see the green, you start to think about how terribly outmassed we are by all this photosynthetic tissue. And then we can start to think about how it's their world and how that operates. And so I see it as a way to transcend myself and in some ways transcend all these kind of miserable social problems that we have and that our parents had and that don't seem to be going anywhere. And I think it's a great opportunity to focus on something that's bigger than ourselves and an organism that in some weird way has it all figured out, you know, has been here 400 million years without wrecking everything. and that's one of the reasons I like it.
Well, switching gears now, along with the science, your book is also about being an academic and to a certain extent being a woman in science. And I want to read a line from your book. You write that sexism is simply the cumulative weight of constantly being told that you can't possibly be who you are. How did that play out in your career?
Well, I mean, I've had rough things happen to me. And I, you know, I wasn't raised to expect life to be pleasant or comfortable. So I wasn't particularly surprised when it turned out not to be. But I think what grinds on you is really those constant moments of being introduced as the professor and seeing that light in somebody's eyes that says, whoa, there's a mistake here. Her? You know, that can't be right. And I get to the point where I actively avoid telling people that I'm an academic or that I'm a scientist or whatever, because I hate that moment. I hate that moment of you, that it couldn't be you. And so it's not a shame thing, but I'm tired of the world taking the most precious thing I am and just refusing to believe it every hour of every day. You know, that doesn't sound like a super huge hardship, but that's the part that grinds on you. And in a way, that's what makes the lab all the more special, is I go in there and I close the door and there's a limited number of people in there and we are what we are. And it doesn't matter whether whoever is outside that door is incredulous about it. All that matters is what we might get done before we have to leave today.
Hope, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Hope Jaron is a geobiologist and geochemist at the University of Hawaii. She's been named one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People. She's the author of the book Lab Girl. She spoke with Veronica Rickert in our studio yesterday.